tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 29th of April 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we've got a case to talk about today, which this is an example just of talking to somebody over the phone and having difficulty in understanding their speech effectively, not being able to understand them when they're speaking English because of they have such a strong accent. And this comes up a lot because when people phone up their banks, for instance, or their telephone operator, they might be redirected to a call centre in New Delhi, where it can be very difficult to understand what the Indian operators are saying. We also have this in Britain, where we have people with very, very strong Pakistani, Indian accents working, or Jamaican accents working in call centres. And it can be very difficult to understand what people are saying. Now, that's just in a call centre, where the worst that can happen is that perhaps something gets taken down wrong, or you're not able to get the information you require. Just imagine how difficult and how dangerous that can be when it's the doctor that can't speak proper English and you can't understand what the doctor is saying or what the nurse is saying or what the surgeon is saying. I mean, we have a big problem in the NHS with this. I forget the actual statistics. I did a podcast with Max Musson about this some years ago. I think it was either 60% or 80% of all the sackings for gross misconduct were from people from other ethnicities. And I think a large part of that must be down to just not actually understanding English properly, not being able to communicate properly. I've had doctors before, and it's been very difficult for me to understand their accent. I've even had a white doctor, and it was difficult for me to understand his Austrian accent many years ago. And I have to say, I have also had a Nigerian doctor once who was very good. I could understand what he was saying. But that doesn't mean that that's going to be all of them, does it? I mean, you have to look at the average. You have to look at them as a group. Just because you were able to understand what your doctor was saying, an elderly person might not have been able to understand what they're saying. And as I say, in this instance, it's not so serious as doctors in hospitals. It's a counsellor who is being pilloried and being reprimanded, basically, for not understanding the English of the person on the other end of the call. Now, this comes from GB News. Counsellor forced to take equality training after telling a phone call handler to speak English. I mean, what's wrong with asking somebody to speak English? What's wrong with saying, I can't understand what you are saying? Can you put me through to somebody else that I might be able to understand what they're saying? And what they're implying here is that if you ask that, then that's racist. So you're supposed to just sit there not understanding what is being said to you, because if you request somebody who speaks more clearly, you're going to be accused of racism. It used to be that we used to speak what was termed as the Queen's English. And people would say, can you say that back to me again in the Queen's English, please? Because that was considered to be the standard. Yet if you say that today, you'll be accused of racism. Or as is this case, you'll be reprimanded by your employers. Janet Cleverly, a white woman, could not understand anything the phone operator, who had lived in the UK for years, was saying. And that is misleading, because he'd only actually been in the UK for 4 years. And he's quite clearly not of British ethnicity. Otherwise, they wouldn't even find it necessary to say, oh, he lived in the UK for years. And clearly, she could not understand anything that he was saying. So what does that have to do with how many years he's lived in Britain? We have people that live in Britain that don't even speak English, and that go to school and don't even speak English, and that have to have interpreters for things. And it's part of a patriotic alternative policy, I think also part possibly of the Restore UK party's policy as well, to stop with these interpreters. If you can't speak English, well, tough. We're not going to pay for you to have an interpreter. A councillor has been forced to take extra training after she told a call handler to speak English over the phone. I mean, it may have been that this person might have been speaking pidgin English. They might have come from Nigeria and be speaking in pidgin, which is very difficult to understand if you're white. And it just sounds as if somebody doesn't know how to speak English. Janet Cleverly, an independent councillor for Newport City Council, made the remarks as she reported a fly-tipping incident. So she was reporting it to the council, and she's a councillor herself. At a council standards committee meeting, she later apologised and said she was mortified by her actions. I think she should have stood her ground. She should have said, look, I couldn't understand what this person was saying. Why is it wrong to say that you cannot understand what somebody is saying? And surely all she was doing was asking for them to provide somebody else that had a better grasp of English. According to the Ombudsman report, the August 2024 incident was not what is expected of an elected member. Well, what is expected? They're supposed to just sit there and not understand what's being said to them? Mrs. Cleverly was said to have interrupted the call handler to ask for somebody who is speaking English. Clearly, she couldn't understand a word that was being said. That's not her fault, is it? The handler had been in the job for 4 weeks after they had come to Britain from Sri Lanka in 2022. So this took place in 2024. So they've been in Britain for 2 years. And according to this byline here, oh, the person had lived in Britain for years. Well, no, they hadn't. They'd lived in Britain for 2 years and they were from Sri Lanka. So they would have had a very, very strong Indian accent. And yet they were put in a position where they were dealing with members of the public, and the members of the public clearly could not understand them. They probably only gave them the job so that they could fulfill a diversity quota, because they certainly didn't give them the job because they spoke English clearly and concisely and could be easily understood. A few minutes later, she added, sorry, I can't understand anything you are saying. Speak English. I mean, what is wrong with that? I think if I was talking to somebody on the phone and I couldn't understand what they were saying, I would say similar. I would say, look, I'm really sorry, but I can't understand what you're saying. And that's what she said here. She apologised. She's effectively blaming herself there at the start of the sentence by saying, I'm sorry, I can't understand anything you're saying. So she's blaming herself for this and asking him to provide somebody who can speak English or speak English more clearly themselves. She emailed the cabinet member responsible for the environment later that day, complaining that the call handler took her information wrong. So it wasn't just that he couldn't speak very good English, he couldn't understand English either. And he wrote down the information incorrectly. I phoned in a complaint about fly tipping this morning, and the person I spoke to could not speak English properly, she said. Why would you have someone manning a call centre? I am all for equal opportunities, but this person took all my information wrong after I had to repeat everything 3 to 4 times and spell everything out lots of times, she said. And I've been in situations like this where it's been somebody that doesn't speak English very well, and they do. They just write down everything wrong, because as difficult as they find it to speak English, they usually find it just as difficult to even understand English. And you think, well, why are you employing somebody like that who is going to be having interactions with the public? I mean, are they just sort of preempting white people becoming a minority and making a guess that the majority of the country will be speaking with an Indian accent or an African accent by that time? A manager listened to the recorded call and flagged it for her unnecessary tone. And the council monitoring office told Mrs. Cleverly it would be investigated. So she reported the fact that this person was incompetent at his job, wrote everything down wrong, and she couldn't understand him. And she was the one that was investigated. The monitoring officer said he found the independent councillor for Betu's comments to be consciously or otherwise racially motivated and discriminatory. Where do they get that from? There's no including of any racial slurs here. She's blaming herself by apologising first, and she's just saying she's not able to understand his English. Is that now racism, to say that you don't understand a person's accent when they're clearly not English? And how is that discriminatory? So they're literally punishing her for saying, I can't understand you, and you need to find somebody that can actually take down what I'm saying correctly. Again, we were talking about discrimination on the Monday, weren't we? About how everything comes down to discrimination between one subject and another subject. And the person that was, I mean, both of them were having problems here, weren't they? The person that couldn't speak the English, he was having problems of discriminating between what words she was saying, and she was having problems discriminating what words he was saying. So it cuts both ways here. And yet she's the one that is being punished here for being so-called discriminatory. The call handler was very emotional and upset about the incident, and the monitoring officer determined the handler's English to be fluent. So the monitoring officer, I should imagine, was also scared that they might be accused of racism as well, or discrimination, if they said, yes, well, I can't understand what they're saying too. Or it may be that the monitoring officer was Indian as well and could quite clearly understand the Indian accent. She couldn't understand the accent. And the customer is always right, or so we used to be told. It now seems to be the other way around, doesn't it? It's the brown person is always right today. Mrs. Cleverly told the Ombudsman she had previously worked in BME communities and had lots of BME friends. BME meaning black and minority ethnic. So she clearly would have understood if it had been an accent which was able to be understood. The fact was that this person was talking in such a strong accent she couldn't understand it. She said the phone call was on a really bad line, and said it was not her intention to upset the handler, as she apologised. I pointed that out as well. She apologised, saying, look, I can't understand you. The panel heard how Miss Cleverly was absolutely mortified by her actions and did have difficulties hearing the call handler, and yet she's still being accused of being discriminatory and this being racially motivated. Councillor Kevin Whitehead, leader of the Betters Wards Independents, said the phone call showed a lack of etiquette, but did not believe it was racial in nature. I mean, how could she show more etiquette? She's already apologised. Mrs. Cleverly had received messages of support from people of various backgrounds and had a long career helping young people in Betu's. He added, the committee heard how Mrs. Cleverly had previously completed training on equalities and equal opportunities and the council's code of conduct, but she still couldn't understand what was being said to her, could she? Perhaps you need to put her on a course in understanding Indian accents. I mean, that might be helpful if they're going to put people with strong Indian accents on the telephone line. I mean, you would think that just common sense would say, look, if you have to have Indians working here, you don't put them on the phone lines, because people aren't going to be able to understand what they're saying, especially if they've only been in the country for 2 years. The panel found her to have breached 3 points of the council's code for members relating to equality, respect and consideration of others, and disreputable conduct. She was censured and required to complete further training for the accident by the committee. So it's an accident here, they're referring it to it as. The Ombudsman, Michelle Morris, found that her underlying motivation was that she was irritated from the outset by the way the call handler spoke. She was irritated by the fact that she couldn't understand what the person was saying. Look at the way they put that. She was irritated by the way the call handler spoke. Like she was the one that got irritated. She's the one with the problem here. But if you're not able to understand what somebody is saying, that is going to irritate you. And if you are English and you can't understand another person's English, then clearly they're the one that is at fault, aren't they? Chairman Andrew Mitchell said the panel was extremely concerned and had considered a suspension. The censure serves as a formal reprimand, the council's deputy monitoring officer said. So they were going to suspend her over this. I mean, it really says that if you can't understand what a foreign person is saying, you'd better shut up. Don't you dare complain, because if you do complain, you're going to be punished. And as I say, you know, how does this apply when you're in a hospital and you've got a doctor that's speaking to you and you can't understand what he's saying? And you say, I'm sorry, I can't understand your English. Could you find somebody that speaks English a little bit more clearly than you? You're going to be accused of racism, aren't you? I mean, I recall a news article fairly recently that was saying, should we deny healthcare to racists? And saying that NHS staff are often the victims of racial abuse. Well, I wonder how much of this so-called racial abuse that the NHS staff have received has in actual fact been people saying, I don't understand what you're saying. Can you please find me somebody that I will understand what they're saying? And of course, if you're elderly, the easiest way to explain that is to say, can you find me somebody white, please, that I, so that I can understand the way that they speak, especially if you're elderly. And it's cases like this that encourage people to just remain silent and to just nod their head, even though they don't understand what's actually being said. And it seems to be that that's what they want people to do, because to do otherwise would be discriminatory. Well, it's news stories like this, I think, which show why people don't actually feel part of the nation anymore, why they don't want to get involved in community projects, why they don't want to go and fight for Britain in a war, for instance. This next article I've got here is titled, Half of Young People Say They Would Never, Never, in capital letters, Fight for Britain. Poll finds. Now, 100 years ago, I think if you asked whether people would fight for Britain when the country was 99.9% white British, I think you would have 100% saying they would fight for Britain. But now that Britain is full of unrelated non-white peoples, why would you go to white fight for somebody who's not part of your ethnic group? Why would you lay down your life for somebody who's not part of your ethnic group? I mean, it's part of evolutionary psychology. And I think really this was first posited by Richard Dawkins. And he said that the reason why people will lay down their lives is for people with a significant amount of the same genes, is because then even if they die and they're not able to pass on their genes, the people that they have saved from death that are able to pass on their genes, they share a considerable amount of the same genes that the person who died has. And that's why people are willing to die for their ethnicity, say, for in a war. But if you live in a country that is multicultural and it has people from all different ethnic groups and you end up laying down your life, there's no guarantee that the ethnic groups that you've saved are going to reproduce a little version of you, are they? What they're going to do is produce a little version of them. And the further they get away from actually being white, the less genes that they have in common with you. So this is the reason, one of the reasons why people won't fight. It's basically an evolutionary reason. But another reason, I think, is because of this last news story that we discussed, that white people are clearly at the bottom of the ladder in victim status. White people will be blamed for everything. White people supposedly have privilege and should be guilty for all the things that they've done. And if white people dare to complain, for instance, just something as simple as saying, well, I don't really understand what you're saying. Can you find me somebody that speaks English a little better? Just doing that will get you punished. And I think it's things like that. That's the reason why people say they won't fight for Britain. Half of British young people would categorically refuse to fight for their country, a new poll has found. When asked about their willingness to take up arms for the UK, 50% of respondents aged 16 to 29 said they would not do so under any circumstances. The poll from the John Smith Centre at Glasgow University, which surveyed 2,000 young Britons, and only 38% would consider military service in certain situations, with the remainder uncertain. And it's also interesting that now that we've got these problems in Ukraine, we've got these problems in Iran, and they're talking about fighting against Russia, these adverts are now being targeted at white people. You're seeing white people in these army adverts, whereas up until now, they've chosen to concentrate on Muslims and trannies and all these so-called marginalised groups. Now that there is an actual chance that they will have to go out and fight, they're targeting white people. And yet half the country says they would under no circumstances fight a war for this country. Within the data, a significant generational gap on matters of national identity and patriotism appeared to emerge, with Generation Z appearing far less inclined to show traditional expressions of loyalty towards Britain than previous generations. I wonder what could have caused that. Eddie Barnes, director of the John Smith Centre, attributed this reluctance to serve to a sense of abandonment. And I would be inclined to agree. It is as if the government has just abandoned all duty to Indigenous Britons. When we look around, our young girls are being raped. Our young boys, in some cases, are also being raped. Our children are being encouraged to think that they're the opposite sex, to go on a course of life that will result in them being castrated or having their wombs removed, their mammary glands removed, never being able to enjoy sex. We're seeing our people being replaced at a incredibly fast rate. I think we're down to 51% of all births are now white British. We're almost a minority in the hospital wards as far as producing children is concerned, and our government does nothing about it. The only thing that our government seems to think should be done about that is to just import more brown people to replace the non-existent white people, and then accuse us of coming up with conspiracy theories when we point to this and say, look, this is quite concerning. So I'm inclined to agree with Eddie Barnes here. I think this is down to a sense of abandonment by the government. He said the idea that the next generation will have it better than previous ones has been a founding belief for decades. Well, that's nationalism, isn't it? That's a nationalist belief. Your duty is to improve the situation for the next generation, because everything is done for you by your parents and by the people that came before you, and the way that you pay them back is to improve things during your life so that the people that come after you have a better life. And again, that is intrinsically related to ethnicity and sharing a considerable number of genes with the people that went before you and the people that went after you. If you remove that and have multiculturalism, people are just going to take whatever it is that they can get, aren't they? And the poor people whose country it was that their ancestors built are going to suffer for that. And they're not going to want to go and fight wars for a country that's done that to them. Today's poll shows that the majority of this generation of young people no longer believe it to be true, and it reveals their loss of belief is collapsing at speed. Locked out of the housing market, pinned down by low wages, loaded by student debt, and increasingly worried about the rise in AI, young people today feel a growing sense of unfairness about the world around them. And of course, the rather large elephant in the room there is the multiculturalism that they are being forced to endure. The fact that all their what would have been their white friends are now being replaced by brown people that they're being told that are just the same as them and that they should be friends with. They can see that, that all their resources are being siphoned off into these foreign groups. And they can see that the people behind this are the government. I don't think they blame these foreign groups for doing this. Everybody knows that it's the government that is at the root of it. That's what's so ridiculous when they accuse us of being motivated by hatred of a skin colour. No, we're motivated by the harm that we see our government doing to us. He summarised the sentiment bluntly. Or as many young people might put it, why fight for a country that isn't fighting for you? Despite the survey's findings, some still have faith in Gen Z that they would in fact answer a call to arms if the situation were to arise. Marc Francois, Shadow Armed Forces Minister, told GB News, "I have seen polling like this before. However, I still believe that if our country were truly attacked, our young would take up arms to defend it." Well, I would say it might defend who it is that's actually attacking the country. Remember the Oxford Union debate of 1933 at the height of interwar pacifism, where the students famously voted more than 2-1 that this house would, under no circumstances, fight for kingdom and country. And that was at a completely different time. That was at a time when Britain was 99.9% white still. I don't think you can apply the way that people thought back then to how the way that people are going to think today, because we're not in the same environment. The context is completely different. And I wonder if a hypothetical situation, imagine if a country was to be attacked by a Muslim country. Do you think that the Muslims would then take up arms against another Muslim country? That's against all their beliefs, isn't it? Muslims are not supposed to take up arms against other Muslims. So that's just an instance there. Do you think that the Chinese would be signing up to fight against the Chinese if China tried to invade? I don't think either of those situations are ever likely to occur. But I do think if they're in those situations that the Chinese would back their Chinese brethren, and I think the Muslims would back their Muslim brethren rather than back some strange abstract idea of democratic values in Britain. People don't lay down their lives for democratic values. They lay down their lives for their kinsmen. However, we know that many of those same students then volunteered to fight in World War II to resist Adolf Hitler and all he stood for. Well, we also know that anybody that was opposed to that got put in prison, didn't they? So as someone who served in the Cold War Territorial Army whilst in his 20s, I still have faith in the young of today. Well, I have faith in the young of today, but I don't think they would be willing to go to fight. I have a lot of faith in young people, young white people, because I was a young white man myself once, and I don't think they're that different today. They just have, in a lot of ways, life is more difficult for them. Also, in a lot of ways, life is easier for them as well. But I think generally they're good people that want to do good. But why would they want to lay down their lives for a multicultural country? In the end, you would lay down your life for your family, but not for somebody else's family. That's what it boils down to. The survey uncovered a stark collapse in young people's confidence about their economic futures, with just 36% now anticipating enjoying better lives than their parents, a figure that has plummeted from 63% only 12 months ago, so it's halved in a year. The dramatic halving of optimism reflects a generation increasingly pessimistic about their prospects in modern Britain. One 22-year-old male respondent captured the prevailing mood. "A growing sentiment among me and peers is, why should we even try to uphold a social contract that will never work for us in the future? We will never be able to own homes or even retire. At this rate, yes, you've been excluded from the social contract. The social contract is now no longer between an Indigenous British government and an Indigenous British people. The social contract is between a multicultural government and a multicultural people who are only united by the fact that they all have a piece of paper saying they're a British citizen." The research further revealed deep disillusionment with the political establishment, with merely a quarter of those surveyed believing the system treats them fairly. And I guess this is Indigenous British, or is it just the young people that they were polling here? I'd be interested whether it was white people in particular that think that the system treats them unfairly. Financial anxieties, concerns about job security and unstable housing topped the list of worries among respondents. A 29-year-old woman expressed anxieties and said, "I'm terrified for the future of not being able to buy a house, not being able to have a family." When asked what would improve their well-being, young people prioritised higher wages, accessible housing and greater career prospects. Well, if you had less immigration and a nationalist government, you would have all of that, wouldn't you? But we don't. We don't have a nationalist government. We have an internationalist government that just looks at people as interchangeable economic units rather than looking at the people as being part of their own extended family. Notably, 55% identified artificial intelligence's impact on employment as a major threat. The poll revealed widespread concern about the state of British democracy, with 56% agreeing that it is in trouble and just 13% disagreeing. And again, what do they mean by democracy? The problem I would say with democracy is that you have less and less and less people voting. And that's because they are not seeing their representatives acting in their interests, and they're losing faith in the system. And this part here about artificial intelligence, that is important. Why are they still bringing in all these people that they say we're going to need to do these jobs that we don't want to do, if we're then going to have artificial intelligence replacing a lot of the jobs that we do have now? We're just heaping up an even bigger problem for ourselves. A similar proportion, 53%, felt UK politics had become excessively divisive. Well, of course it will be divisive. The country is divided. That's what diversity is. It's division. When asked to identify a political leader who best embodies British values, 45% could not name anyone currently in office. I would have said Rupert Lowe there, I think, embodies British values. And I have increased faith, actually, in the political system since the advent of Rupert Lowe. Of course, I am a member of the Restore Party, and I do recommend people join that. And I also recommend people join Patriotic Alternative as well, so that they can take part in community events and build a strong ethno-nationalist community that can help you in times of need, like Patriotic Alternative helped me when I was in prison. It's a very commendable organisation that I recommend people join. But I don't recommend people join the army. We do have to have an army, and the army does have to have a hierarchy, and it has to obey its orders. I don't think people should be saying, oh, I'm not going to go and fight in the Middle East because I don't agree with it. The army has to do what the army is directed to do, the same as the police have to do what the police are directed to do. The change needs to come from the establishment, the government that is actually directing the army and directing the police. That's what needs changing. I don't advocate people refusing to obey orders. I think people should do their job to their best of their ability. And I have to say, I was quite impressed with the justice system and the barristers and the nationalised prison system, and people were professional and they did seem to be trying to do their best at their job, and that's what we want to see. Of course, I don't agree with people being sent to jail for speech crimes, but I think what you can expect to see is professionalism. And on the whole, generally, that is what I saw, professionalism. But that's getting on to another subject here. Thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.